Blog Talk Radio.
When looking for a new truck driving job,
well, that was quick. Welcome to Garage Talk Live. It is Tuesday. I'm thinking it's Monday. Tuesday, May 31st. Fun weekend in racing this weekend. A very special guest co-host joining me today. All the way from Missoula, Montana on the road. Keeping an eye on all things out on the road this coming few days. I'd like to welcome the one and only, the awesome Jenny Harrelson. Jenny, welcome back to Garage Talk Live. Last time you were a guest, today, this time you're co-hosting.
Hi, Vince. I'm excited to be here. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, it's always, I always wanted to have you on the show because I know you had a few different things in the works, and what a better way to figure it out than, you know, working with your schedule being 3 hours away as far as time zones go. You know, which lunchtime over on this side of the country is pretty much breakfast where you're at and part of, you know,
that's right,
part of your work day. So I didn't want to interrupt your work schedule.
Well, I'm on vacation, so this is awesome. This is perfect timing.
Well, last time you were at Richard Petty Driving School. Now you're with Ron Fellows doing road course work and I guess running a lot of Corvettes. Do you feel it's more fun going from a stock car to a street car that is a lot of fun to drive and costs a lot of money?
You know, I love those stock cars. I really do. That's like my first love in racing. So I just never get tired of those stock cars or any race car for that matter. But Ron Fellows' performance driving school out there with the Corvettes is phenomenal. Those cars are amazing. They are race cars. They just lack a roll cage. If you put a roll cage in them, they're really, really good, fun cars to drive on the racetrack. I'm still doing the Richard Petty driving experience, so I'm still out there doing events for them, doing ride events and things like that. But most of my time is out there at the Corvette track, and it is phenomenally fun.
Well, at least you get to do a few lefts and right turns as opposed to going around in circles. So, you know, must be awesome living out there in Sin City, under all the neon and all that. So, you know, I guess every once in a while getting away out into the wilderness, so to speak, is a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, that's right. We get a chance to get away from Vegas sometimes just for a vacation. We go see our family about twice a year, and it's up here in the Northwest. So we get our taste of snow, and then we get to go back home to Vegas where it's nice and warm. So we enjoy that part of it after living here for so many years. So, yeah.
I'll tell you, is there anything that you were doing exciting over this 4th of July? Before we get into talking about the racing, did you get to watch any racing over the weekend?
I watched some highlights, and I got to watch part of the Xfinity race. However, I did catch up on the highlights prior to the show here. I've been up on top of a mountain in my dad's new place, out of reception and everything. So it's been a couple days kind of out of touch with the world, but I'm glad to be back here. We're on the road today, and so we have reception out here, which is great. Reception is a great thing.
Yes, it is. Well, they got cell service out there, so you do have some sort of reception.
Oh, it's cell service if you stand in the right spot at the right time.
Kind of
off and on. You got to find the right spot, stand on one foot, hold it out the window. No, just joking. But it's close. It's close. How was your Memorial Day?
Well, I guess Friday was ribs. Friday was burgers. Saturday was ribs. Saturday was burgers. Sunday was ribs. And yesterday were steaks. So it was kind of a beef and pork weekend. Sandwiched around watching some Indy 500 action and Coke 600 action. 1,100 miles of race in one day is a lot to watch. And
That's
thing
a
I
lot. Yeah.
Cold beverages nearby.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks for your service again, Vince. Does everybody know your story about being a Marine?
I think I don't hide the facts, but, you know.
That's awesome.
And everything I pretty much post on my Facebook page is either crude humor, pro-Marine Corps, and pro-firearms.
Uh-huh.
I guess as a Marine, you like shooting things, mainly enemy people, but, you know, you shoot what you can.
Awesome.
I live on a mountain here in Virginia. We have reception here.
That's awesome. You have bears and reception at your place. That's pretty cool. And you
bears,
can shoot guns
foxes.
Off your front porch, right?
Yep. I am surrounded by national forests. As a matter of fact, the way my yard is situated, if I look across it at the right angle, it goes up a hill, even higher than me. So if I shoot anything that way, it's just going to go into the dirt. So I don't know, there's no chance of me accidentally, you know, sending one too far out of sight and out of mind. And, you know, gun safety first.
Yeah, that's right. I believe that 100%. With my dad being a Marine as well, we know some firearm safety for sure.
I'm sure he's taught you well.
Yes, he has. Very well.
Tell him Semper Fi for me, Beanie, sitting right next to you. Or are you back in the sleeper portion?
Oh, I sure will. No, I'm actually sitting in the cab now, and he's outside. Kind of, I think he's out there just hanging out. He didn't want to make me nervous, so he went outside. Isn't that nice?
Oh, that was nice.
That was
at least
nice.
At least he's not going down the road. I was waiting for the gear changes, you know?
No, we made sure we're pulled over. We have clear reception, the whole bit.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering, especially out there in Montana where the mountains are a bit higher and the plateaus are a lot flatter. It's pretty nice country out there.
It's beautiful. It looks like a post.
Waiting to see your Facebook pictures from the road trip come up.
Yes, yes. I'll be posting some of those for sure. I'll be posting some pictures from off my dad's deck kind of on a hill on the top of a mountain where your house is. It's got to be beautiful where you live. Where he lives, it's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. You and Tyler are going to have to come out and visit one day.
Well, yeah,
we're
going to have to come out and go to Bristol, like you said. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, night race in Bristol should be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But, unfortunately,
that would be awesome.
It's in the summertime, so you don't have to worry about snow. And another cool thing, they have out here. You got Martinsville Speedway as well, and Charlotte's about
mm-hmm.
the furthest away at 3 hours. So we got some awesome NASCAR tracks, different sizes, shapes, and varieties. And only two different sizes.
Well, you're in the right. You're in the right country for that. Right part of the country for that, for sure.
Yeah, and I used to, you know, be up near Dover and Pocono, but. Dover
mm-hmm.
I used to go to all the time, but Pocono is a little bit further out. Let's see. Dover I could drive back and forth. I could commute to, and Pocono I'd had to get a place to stay. So
okay.
That's the only thing about that. And that's Pocono's where we're headed to. What's that?
Yeah. Now, do you go out to all the races that are near you? Do you go to Charlotte? Did you go to Charlotte this weekend?
No, I didn't. I stayed home. I'm not driving in that traffic. You kidding me?
How about the, have you been to the NASCAR Museum in Charlotte?
No, I've been pretty much stuck
here.
Well,
next time you get over there.
I'm not stuck here. I do want to get out there and check out the Hall of Fame as well, but because that's down in Charlotte.
Ooh, cool.
But you went to a fancy place about 6 hours to the west of me, actually, the Corvette Museum.
Yes.
And you got a. How awesome was that?
Oh, that was so awesome! The National Corvette Museum. People may have heard of the sinkhole that happened right at the museum. That was pretty neat. Got to tour that. That's not cool that the cars got crushed, but it was kind of cool seeing the cars that they pulled out of there. They had a few that were really, really mangled, dirt still on them and everything, and it was just cool to see being around all those Corvettes, and they, I mean, it's just amazing. It was a great experience. And
well, you have to let me know when you're heading on out, and maybe I can take a trip out there as well. And of course, you'll be there for work, so I'll just be there for pleasure.
Yeah, well, you would love it. I mean, it was spectacular. There was cars everywhere, and they had some really cool cutaway cars, you know, that showed the subframes and the whole bit. So they were really cool. A lot to look at for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing how. They probably have the evolution of the Corvette there. I think that sinkhole thing made national news. So.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and when you go to the museum, it is pretty cool. You can see the evolution of the Corvette and all the way from the first generation on up to the current seventh generation. It's pretty awesome.
I know. I kind of like that old body style pre-1984, you know, with the... That, you know, it was the era. I remember being in North Carolina. I was stationed down there. The Chevy dealer had a brand spanking new 78 Corvette. And they wanted, like, get this, $8,500 for it.
Wow. Was that brand new?
That was brand new. Sticker on it and everything.
Wish those kind of deals would come around this nowadays, right?
Yeah, that was a lot of money back then, so.
Mm-hmm. What color was it?
Silver. I think it was
silver.
One of the
awesome.
Indy Pace Car editions.
Mm-hmm.
But
right
back
on,
then,
right on.
It's, we're still more expensive than everything else. You could put it. Cheap Pontiac Trans Am for a few thousand less, you know.
Uh-huh, right.
I have
yeah,
a friend. What's that?
Oh, those cars have come so far. They've come a long way from where they started, you know, the whole evolution of them.
Yeah, I know. It's just amazing that, you know, then they had to compete. Then there's certain cars that weren't able to hang with the Corvette. Like, I know the Ford Thunderbird came out and it was supposed to compete with the Corvette, but that turned into more like a family car, but the Corvette stayed
mm-hmm.
true to its sports car heritage with the two seats, and then it was just... It's weird, and I think Chrysler even had anything close to that. So
yeah, they have it down now, especially now, like the performance and just what you get with the Corvette package is just incredible. For the price, it's unbeatable, you know. For the fuel mileage, it's unbeatable. For the horsepower, it's pretty unbeatable. So it's great all around. You know, those cars are phenomenal. Have you been in a new C7 car, Corvette?
Nah, I haven't. I fear, the old saying, if you break it, you bought it. I'd be kind of afraid.
Yes. They're
you
cool.
Know,
well, if you ever make it down to Vegas, I'll show you them.
Oh, you're the first person. I'm going to let you know when I'm heading out there. I'm going to say, hey, heading to Vegas. What's the good place to stay? Where's a good place to eat? Two places on my bucket list.
Up.
I think we've talked about that. The Vamps and I got to go see his little museum there.
Right on. Yeah, I've been to Vamps quite a few times. It's awesome. They have a great stage. You know, they have lots of concerts there. And just found a new band recently, actually, that's just phenomenal. Really, really good band that played there. So. Yeah, come on down. We'll have some fun and get you in some car. Get you in a car of some kind, whether it's a NASCAR or a Corvette. We'll get it figured out for you.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I know my wife would like that. She's a gearhead.
That's cool. That's cool when you can both be a gearhead. That's awesome.
Yeah, she's more of a gearhead than I was. Her dad was a front-end specialist, and daddy's little girl and an only child. Boy, she got hooked up when it came to doing the car thing, you know. So she's changed mufflers, water pumps, radiators, just about everything you could think of except blocks.
That's awesome. We need more ladies like that. That is cool, you know. Breaking the
That's
mold.
That's for sure. And the ladies that are in motorsports, you can tell they're really into it. They got their starts like yourself in motorcycles and motocross and all that fun stuff. Me, I'm not a motorcycle person. I'd probably kill myself because I used to be nuts on four wheels, so I didn't really want to try two. So
that's wisdom right there when you can figure that out before it happens. When you just know that about yourself, that's good.
And another thing I really try to avoid is that I always had this quirk that at one time the only accidents I've ever been in a vehicle were when somebody else was driving, so I did kind of get a little bit edgy when somebody else was driving me too, so.
Yeah, I could imagine for sure.
I mean, the most serious wreck I've ever been was in my own car, somebody else driving, 4th of July weekend. I'll never forget it. 4th of July weekend, 1980. A buddy of mine and I went out because he bugging me to drive my car. Because he had a Chevette with a 4-speed, and I had a Trans Am with a 4-speed, no 455 cubic incher. And we were partying one night, and, you know, don't drink and drive. I'm living proof. Living, and that's the key word right there. And we went out down the highway. It wasn't an interstate at that particular point of the road, but it was an open highway, and heading back to our starting point, we were doing well over 120 miles an hour, and he lost control and rolled it and slammed into a pole, took down the transformer, sparks flying everywhere.
Was it at night?
Oh, yeah, it was at night. It looked pretty as hell. Somebody said it looked like out of a Steve McQueen movie, one of the witnesses. Another
well,
five,
dang,
another
I'm glad
3
you're
miles.
Alive.
Was good.
Oh,
yeah,
really? Was there a cliff or something?
We hit a ditch after the car lost control. And that rolled it over. And if it didn't hit the pole, there was this really big, fat oak tree. I mean, wider than the car tree. Needless to say, I got out of the car.
Yikes.
I'm walking around. I hear him saying, help get me out. And I felt this burning sensation. Here I stepped on a wire.
From the pole?
For the longest time, I had two little scars on my foot, about a half inch long, about 2 inches apart, where the electricity went through my foot.
Oh, geez. Was it from the car or from the pole that you hit? Oh, man.
So, and then after
that,
I says, I'm staying here. I got, you know, was able to get the door open. Here he's curled around the steering wheel instead of having it buried in his chest. I don't know if somebody was watching us that night. I did got to go to, it was a Saturday night. I went to church that Sunday after I got back to the, after they hauled us back to the barracks. And so I had to thank the Lord for not taking me home, you know.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I've had lots. It's amazing when you can see those close calls. Not that you want the close calls, but it's cool when you can just see God working in your life, you know. And he just brings you out of that. That's so awesome.
So I think from that point on, I've been meant to stay here for a while for some purpose. I'm still trying to figure that out, though.
Well, good. I'm glad. Were you really injured?
No. As a matter of fact, I still have a little scar on my left hand from that incident. I wasn't injured at all. I looked worse than the driver, which is usually the case, and he was fine. The only thing is when we were in the they came and got us in a, I guess, a van instead of an ambulance. They took us to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And in the van, we were like, I was like thinking, what's that smell? And here he had a, he defecated on himself.
Oh! Yeah, I hear that happens.
But that was the worst of it. The car's totaled. There's, I have a couple of pictures of the before and after on Facebook in my think timeline photos.
Check that out.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a pretty car. It was a shame, too. It was the pre-Bandit era, the, like Smokey and the Bandit hadn't even come out yet. And well, actually, it had come out. This was 78, and actually, this was 80. I had the car for basically a year. And
wow.
It was fun to drive.
I'm sure they totaled it out, right?
Oh, yeah, it was bent pretty good. You can see the impact from where the hit the pole. There's like a dimple on the passenger side was the worst. The roof was caved in down halfway to where it should have been. And
mm-hmm.
The driver's side is the part that hit the pole. So I kind of remember grabbing the handle above the glove box and ducking down. We weren't wearing seat belts, so there's another no-no. So, but if I think I had...
Really?
Then
no seatbelts, and you still came out like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
The Lord was watching out for you. Awesome.
Yeah, you'll see you'll see the pictures of it, and it's a shame.
Mm-hmm. What'd you get after that? Did you go back for the same car?
It took me a while because it was toward the end of my military service, so I got out and went home and drove around with the family car for a while, then. I think and then the first car I got after that was a 77 Trans Am, but the only difference, this was an automatic as opposed to a four speed.
Awesome.
And then I had that for a while and sold that to my brother, and he wrecked it. But at least he didn't flip it, and he went sideways in the rain and. But about that point, it was, you know. Then after that, before I got married, with any kind of performance, was a 91 Turbo Eclipse, which was a pretty neat little car to drive.
Was it fast? Sounds fast.
Yeah, I again, doing something I shouldn't do. I had it up to like 130 on the Atlantic City Expressway heading to work one morning, but at least radar detectors were legal there, so I was able to tell where the cops were.
They wouldn't see you anyway. There'd just be a flash going by.
Yeah, but I knew where the cops sat, so I let off before their last place they can be parked before I had to get off my exit.
Mm-hmm.
And, but that was fun, too. Now, the wife's got the hot rod. She's got an 08 Mustang GT, so with a 5-speed. So.
Awesome. Does she love it?
Oh, she loves it. She wants a new one, though. More horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
6-speed.
You got to get her into a Corvette.
She's not a Chevy person.
No, she's not?
Nah. I'm not really a Chevy person either. Matter of fact, a friend of mine that I used to live next door to was selling his 82 Corvette. It's got 28,000 miles on it, and he wants 11,000 for it. So if you want to swing out and pick up a Corvette, these are mechanics. I know this thing's in pristine condition. It's a pearl white with blue striping. I think that's all the detail he gave, though.
That's awesome.
Well, you're a little more crazier than I am. You have a motorcycle that you like to tear up the highways with. Or did you get rid of that?
I love my motorcycle, yes. I use that as my daily driver, and I just love it. I don't know what it is about it. I just love it. I saw my dad always said growing up, you know, those are, you know, those people are crazy that ride those and stuff like that. He would make those kind of comments. And then then I heard one drive by one day. Somebody was really winding it out, and I was like, oh, I have to have one of those. So talked to my husband about it. I told him I wanted a bike, and he said, okay. So I started looking around for a bike, and I said, I want this one. I'm going to go pick it up. And he goes, what? He didn't think I was serious. But so we got the bike. We got one bike. We got my bike, and we were talking about it, and he said, well, when I want to ride, you can just ride on the back. And I looked at him like, yeah, right. You have to get your own bike. I'm not riding on the back. So he decided to get his own bike, and that's where we ended up. So we both have motorcycles. He actually just turned over 50,000 miles on his just this weekend, or the weekend before, actually. And mine is up around 46,000 right now. So we ride them a lot. We love those things. The Vegas heat doesn't bother me either. I just go anyway.
Well, at least out there, the weather's pretty dry, you know, and you don't have to worry about rain too often.
Yeah,
so
that's
pretty
nice.
Good bike weather out there.
Very good bike weather, yes. It does get cold in the winter, but I just bundle up and go anyway also. And you're not a motorcycle guy, so have you been on one before?
Briefly, yes, I have been. Of course, I was riding on the back, and it was when I was in North Carolina. I figured I'd ride with a buddy to work one day, and and I did so, but, you know, I wasn't used to doing, like, the leaning and all that kind of stuff because I wasn't a rider, so I didn't want to conflict what he was doing, so he dumped the bike.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah.
I thought about getting a three-wheeler.
Oh, those are cool.
That's more my speed.
Those are actually outlawed, I think, here.
Why?
You know, maybe they're not now, but I remember at one point they were. One of our friends had a three-wheeler, and they called it the three-wheeler of death because it was just crazy. It was a little three-wheeler, and it was powerful. And just with the three wheels instead of four, it just reacted different, you know. And so that's what they nicknamed it because it was pretty crazy.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What was that? Oh, they went flying off the side of a logging road in that three-wheeler one time. On accident. They didn't mean to.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Now there's the Can-Ams, which are the two wheels up front, which looks kind of strange.
I think that looks really strange. You know, I've never got a chance to drive one, though. So I can't really comment too much. But, yeah, they definitely have those. Those have got everything on it. Stability control. Yeah, I agree. I've driven a Harley before, and I thought that was a little, it's a lot different than my bike, you know. It's a lot heavier, and I don't know, I just like my bike. I guess later on in life, maybe I'll feel like cruising, but right now I like the speed, so.
Yeah, that's the thing about, in the NHRA, the top pro stock motorcycle is a Harley. So they are pretty good on the drag strip.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
You're thinking of going off road racing now, aren't you?
Yes, I'm so excited. I can't spill too many details on next season here, but we are working diligently. We're working hard on next season, and we have some crazy things in the works. So keep your ears peeled and your eyes out because we're definitely going to be out there running this coming season, next 2017.
Well, we'll definitely have to keep everybody posted on that. Of course, you could tell me off air because
yes,
I won't blab.
I can tell you a little off air. Yes, I could. Yep. But, yeah, we're going to go run some dirt. We're going to get a truck and go hit some jumps on a closed course, so it should be a good time. Have you seen the Lucas Oil Off-Road Racing Series at all?
No, it's hard to keep track of all this stuff. You know, there's like so many different things, three or four different channels. I try to keep eye on my favorites and people who join me on the show, and then friends, of course, you know, like yourself.
I'll have to send you a video on Facebook just so you can kind of get an idea of what it is. It's pretty cool. I think you'd enjoy it, even though you're not a big dirt fan, right? But it's incredible.
Well, that kind of stuff, I'd be a fan of it, you know. I've watched dirt cars, but that's, you know, basically there's a different kinds of dirt activity that's fun, and you know, off-roading seems to be a little, it appears a lot more fun than, you know, basic dirt track racing and at your little short track type of thing, because as fun as that is and as how it grows drivers to reach the upper echelons of motorsports, I don't know, you know, I get bored very easy, so I got to have something to keep my interest, and, you know, watching people bounce around on things. Hell, I might even like to be a tow driver or something on that. I could. That sounds like something I could do as opposed to.
Yeah, you'd love it. You'd love it. At one time, we're going to have to next year get you out to a race. It's fun. I better not talk anymore about that. I'm going to spill some beans here, and I shouldn't do that.
Nah, well, we can do that later when we're private conversing.
Yes.
But now, monster trucks is something I got into. I haven't been to one, but I was watching some of that because one of my guests is a monster truck driver, and she comes on pretty regular. And her name is Cynthia Gauthier out of Montreal, Quebec, and she drives the Monster Dalmatian. Now, that's some serious driving of a big, crazy vehicle there. I think you'd like that.
Yes, I would. You know me well. That would be cool. That would definitely be cool. Jumping stuff and doing backflips in one of those would be phenomenal.
Well, I was watching the thing. Was it Monster Jams? And they had the women of Monster Jam. I think they could have did more on that instead of showing some of the guys doing the wheel stands and the backflips, which is awesome to watch, by the way. But they were featuring a bunch of the women that actually were in there, and, you know, there's more in the sport than people realize, just like drag racing in the NHRA. I mean, you have...
Yes.
Yeah, it's a quarter mile, but the women that compete actually win. In NASCAR, they could barely get a ride, so, you know, makes you kind of wonder what's wrong with the picture there.
Right, right, yep. Yep, girls, it's pretty awesome. We've had some women go out there and kind of pave the way, you know, open the eyes of the public is pretty much what they've done. And to go against, you know, there hasn't been women in motorsports in a long time, just very sparsely, you know, just a few here and there. And now it's growing, and it's really cool to see, because it's great. You know, if you feel like you've been born to be a race car driver, you just go do it, you know? Doesn't matter anything else. Just go for it. So I think that's phenomenal. It's great. It's great to see.
And that's a good thing. Now, I saw a picture when you shared the post where you were able to get signal there, and one of your friends, was he a pro stock driver, pro mod driver in the NHRA? Or was he just taking a picture before that?
Yeah, that wasn't his car. However, he was a racer. He drag raced for a lot of years, and he also is really good friends with a gentleman who did motorcycle racing over the years. So they both are big time into it, and they do it. They go to the car shows and all kinds of things, and they just they're really into it, and it's cool to see. You know, they raced back in the day, and they don't race right now, but. They sure have a lot under their belt, you know?
Definitely. I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to being able to pursue it, or you leave to start a family and stuff like that. You know, some people would rather, I guess, and a lot of that has to do with the money involved, too. You have to go out and hunt down sponsors and things like that, so... It
yeah,
kind of makes
probably,
it tough.
Yeah, that's about 90% of it, I'd say. The rest of it comes easier than that part. But, yes, that's a big part of it, absolutely, 100%.
And that seems like a full-time job.
It is, yes, it is. And then not only – you don't just want to get, you know, a sponsor, just somebody that, you know, you want to find somebody that's passionate about it, that you can relate with and that you can give their product or service, you know, a really big push, and you can give them more than they're giving you. So it's hard to find that. When you can find that, though, that's a pretty unbreakable team right there, you know, between the sponsor and the racing. You know, it's great when they can be a part of it. And it's not just like a number on a piece of paper that they're looking at. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're a logo on the side of a vehicle. It's the stuff you have to do as far as, like, appearances and all that kind of stuff. As long as they pay for
the
flights and stuff, you can't complain, but, you know.
Absolutely. Yep, there's a lot to it. And if you want to keep a good sponsor, you really got to go above and beyond. And that's what I think we should all do. I think a lot of what happens with a lot of sponsors is people get into racing and they're excited about it, and then they end up with a team or an individual that will just take their money and give them hardly nothing back, you know. They kind of take it and run, so to speak. They just pop a little sticker on the side of their car and they're gone. So I aim to do exactly opposite of that, you know.
Yeah, this way they get to know you, you get to know them, and and you'd be a good spokesperson. You have that upbeat personality.
Well, thank you.
And I
We're
think you would.
That's a test for sure.
That, and, you know, you're always positive thinking and all that kind of stuff. I think that's one of the things about being a race car driver you need anyway. You always have to be on the upbeat.
Yes, it's no fun being around people that aren't.
Do you ever get mad at something?
Oh,
I couldn't picture you ever getting mad.
Sure. I know. People say that they can't picture me ever getting mad, but I am Italian, so mostly Italian, so I definitely get mad. But when I get mad, it motivates me a lot, so it's usually a good thing, you know. But, yes, I definitely get mad. But I try to look at the, you know, positive side of things. You know, when I was younger, I was little bit more of a firecracker, but now I try to use a little wisdom when I get really mad and just see if it's worth it to pursue whatever I'm thinking about at the moment.
Just take it out on the hubby. That's what wives do.
I try not to do that either. That's hard though when you live with somebody. You know, they're kind of getting the mix. You know, with all that's going on, and vice versa. So, but yeah, it's tough. Especially in racing, you know, when you put so much, or anything that you put so much blood, sweat, and tears, so much effort, so much of your life into, and something happens where somebody just makes a bonehead move, and there goes your chance at a win or a good finish or something like that. So you get really mad.
That's for sure. I could imagine that, especially if you're that close on the track and you're coming down to the finish line and you're racing neck and neck. I guess that's why you always want to gap with somebody, because there's always that chance they might tap you on the fender and get you a little loose and you'll pass you right at the line.
Yep, they might boot you right into the wall, last lap, all bets are off, right?
That's what they say, you know. Speaking of which, the Indy 500, this is more of a Cinderella story. Here was a guy who was waiting to be a Formula One driver. I guess he gets a call from Andretti Autosport, you know, Michael Andretti and his race team.
Mm-hmm.
He's a rookie. He's probably never really driven an Indy car before. Comes to the Brickyard, the 100th Indianapolis 500.
Yes.
And wins the race. Of course, it was a little fuel mileage thing, which, you know, 500 miles in a car like that, or any car, like even the Coke 600, which followed shortly thereafter, that can come into play. And, you know, just the fact that he was in the right place at the right time, and he wasn't even in the running most of the day.
Isn't that awesome? That's just so cool.
Now his
what
name
do you
will
think
be
about that?
Pretty much. I think it's pretty awesome, because you figure the guy's from California. He's sitting over in Europe somewhere. I think I forget where they said he was sitting at. He gets the call to come over, and, you know, he's not with a slouch team, you know, like, and that's another thing you worry about, because the some people just take the ride just to be in the event. And I'll write the Indy 500, the Daytona 500, big races like that. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But just getting in the event, getting your name out there, and if you do have a moment of glory, like even leading for a few laps, it looks good. But you know, the few laps that this guy led, the end of the race,
there
now he's
going
to be holding that. Right. He gets the Borg Warner trophy. He gets to drink the milk. I hope it's cold. I would hate to drink warm milk.
At that point, you probably drink it anyway. You're just so thrilled. Oh, my gosh.
We're dehydrated from sitting in that cockpit for 3 hours.
Yes.
I mean, driving a little missile around there. I mean, you're doing 225 miles an hour average on the lap. So, and that was believe it or not, it was the fastest lap of the race was 225.28 on lap 106.
Woo-hoo!
By the winner. So he did lead early
All
in the
right.
race. But the, you know, the favorites were Juan Montoya, who crashed out, and of course Elio Castroneves, Ryan Hunter-Reay. Hinchcliffe was on the pole. You know, usually the IndyCar racing usually isn't that exciting on the most part, even if it is the biggest race of the year. But you know, it's usually more car oriented than driver oriented.
Right, right.
But if you
I just love
if you watch the Coke 600, you would have thought the same thing.
Yeah, the whole story with coming back to the rookie winning, you know, is phenomenal, because it looks like he just got a seat, you know, and he did at the last moment pretty much. But, you know, what he had to do to get to that point, to be the one that they called, to get into that seat, you know, has probably been his life work, which is pretty awesome. That's pretty cool.
I know. It's just like, how do you, I mean, it's, what was his car number? 98. So that means, you know, IndyCar don't have their set numbers. They're basically the number of their car is their points finishing position. You know, like you, if you're the champion, you get car number. Your car number is one the next year, and you know, I guess they worked their way on down. And his car was 98, so he must have been one of the guys. Like Michael Andretti was like saying, "All right, who can we get over here? That's looking for that we could stick in a car to." And maybe he had money with him. He did have Napa on the car, so you know, that always helps have bringing a sponsor with.
Oh, yeah, big time.
I mean, that's not one of the sponsors you usually expect to see in an Indy car. On an Indy car, usually you think of a Sprint Cup stock car or somewhere in the Xfinity series. But either way, he sponsors logo in Victory Lane and one of the people on that Borg Warner trophy. He gets his little face put on there on the big one. Of course, he gets to keep a little. I think they give him a little one. Usually there's a big one with everybody on it and a little one, kind of like the Stanley Cup, you know, where everybody gets their name on the trophy. Then they get this little one in the ring and, And being a hockey fan and a player yourself, Stanley Cup Finals started last night. Pittsburgh versus San Jose. So you got a little East Coast, West Coast thing going there.
Yeah, that was actually pretty cool. I caught the tail end of that one. I caught the last few minutes of that game, which was phenomenal. Did you get to see it?
Actually, no, I didn't. I haven't watched the hockey game in quite some time.
Okay, yeah. It was a good one. It was a good one. It went right down to the wire, so that's always a good one. And speaking of the Stanley Cup, one year it was pretty awesome. A player from our hometown was on a winning team, and this was quite a few years ago. It was the Avalanche team, and we actually got to touch the Stanley Cup. He came and brought it into our small town where we lived, and we got to see him and see the trophy and touch it and all that good stuff. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. The only, I did actually get to see it when I went to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto.
Oh, cool. Oh, well, how was that?
That was awesome. They got some interactive stuff, too, where you could be a goalie, and there's a, they give you a stick, a mask, and a glove, and they're staring at a screen, like a like an old-style movie screen, and there's slots in it where the puck comes out of. So you're basically facing the action coming at you, and the next thing you know, there's pucks coming out of the screen, and you got to block them because there's a net behind you.
Oh, cool. That sounds like fun.
It was. I stopped 7 out of 10.
Oh, that's good. Natural goalie.
And I didn't even have leg pads. I was wearing flip-flops, too.
Kept you light on your feet, right?
Yeah, well, you had to worry about it because if you really couldn't slide your feet because the flip-flops would grip, and then you'd probably rip the toe out because and I had sneakers in the car, and I was going to put them on. And I said, nah, screw it. I didn't know what the Hall of Fame looked like. And
mm-hmm.
And then they had that, and then they had a – then they had another place where it was a shooting, where you could actually shoot. They had a net and six and nine. It was like and sectioned off like nine blocks, and you'd have to shoot and knock. You know, you hit the thing and turn the light off. So basically, shooting accuracy. Oh, and 9 for 9 on that one because I used to play a little bit. You know.
Nice. Yeah, what did you play? What position were you?
Well, when I played on the street, I played in the net. And when I played on the ice, I played the right winger.
Oh, cool. You got to be fast to play a wing.
Yeah, well, I was a lot younger then, too. So, and it was a bunch of us. There used to be a place that had what they call open hockey. A bunch of people just came up, brought their gear, and then just skated around and
mm-hmm.
practiced their stick handling and shooting and all that. And then a bunch of us figured out, oh, let's get together and rent the rink out one night. So, or one night a week on the weekend. So every weekend we'd meet at said rink and rent the ice for an hour and play a game. You know, no officials, no penalties. You know, just basically up and down and that.
It's a big scrimmage game. Awesome.
And I did get to play a little bit in Japan when I was stationed over there. A bunch of my buddies there figured, oh, let's go to the ice rink in Hiroshima there. Now it didn't glow from the nuke, from the atomic bomb going off years ago.
How were they? Were they welcoming to you or no?
Yeah, they were, actually. They were kind of, I think now it might be a little more different because back then, you know, English and Japanese were, you know, not too many people spoke English there unless they lived near the base. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of us really didn't speak Japanese too well.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we were able to communicate. And then one night we were there, we played a little bit there with them. And basically that's what they did too, is they had it was the Hiroshima Hockey Club. And they basically, you know, I guess had, you know, friend teams and then played other towns and
mm-hmm.
they didn't have Zamboni. They used to have these big squeegees to get the slop off the ice and it's kind of weird.
Really? So
yeah.
Was the ice pretty chopped up?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But,
yeah.
But it was fun. Just to say I got to play in another country that wasn't
Canada.
Yeah,
that sounds great. Yeah, I played in Japan. That sounds pretty neat.
Yeah, I wish we had smartphones back then, because then we would have been posting pictures up of everything.
That's a good thing, right, that sometimes you didn't have a smartphone back then?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that was done that isn't on record anywhere. Now, you said
that's what I hear.
You got to see the Xfinity race.
I got to see a part of it, pretty much the last part of it. And I got to
see. That's the best part.
Yeah, it was. I got to see Logano and Larson battling it out, kind of switching positions there a couple times.
Larson and Logano have been battling even in the All-Star race, too, as well, last week. So it looked kind of – I think Larson, at this point, he's knocking on the door. So you got to – it's – you know he's going to win. It's just a matter of when now. And another kid that – this year, who's impressing everybody, is Chase Elliott, Bill Elliott's son, who's – took over the 24 for Jeff Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the Xfinity race on Saturday was one of the few that he hasn't been in the top 10 in recent while, since the season began. I think there's only like three races he's been out of the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
But Denny Hamlin took the win for good old Joe Gibbs Racing and kind of set the stage for everybody thought he was a favorite going into the Coke 600, but it was another Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much owned it.
Yeah, and, you know, I just heard about this. I didn't actually get to see this part, but where Edwards had the double penalty. He went into pit road and he was still too fast to serve his penalty, so he had to do a stop and go. Did you see that part?
Yeah, and then he was too fast on stop and go.
Yeah.
But no, dude. He still wound up he wound up 18th, the one lap down, so that kind of hurt his chances. But Martin Truex pretty much owned that race. I mean, I'm glad.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I was sitting in the stands, I'd be out of the souvenir trucks and the beer trucks and five times for two. 392 of the 400 laps.
Yeah, that's a lot. That sounds like racing from long ago when Jeff Gordon was young and he'd go out there and do that a lot.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the Coke 600 was Jeff Gordon's first ever win back in 90 something or other. I think you weren't even born mm-hmm. yet.
Yes, Jeff Gordon was my driver for sure. I am still a Jeff Gordon fan a lot. Awesome. I actually used to walk around in high school and things with my my rainbow jacket on.
Well, it was a pretty cool looking jacket too. I mean, you know.
That's true.
All those colors. It's fitting for a young lady.
Yeah, you couldn't miss me in it for sure.
You figure what? Each lap is a mile and a half. So eight laps mm-hmm. that he didn't lead. About 12 miles. So he led over 580 miles of 600-mile
uh-huh.
race.
That's pretty good.
That's,
huh?
That's a little,
he had that car dialed.
That's a little hard to fathom.
Yeah, that was a long one, and it'd be interesting to see the stands like if they were doing for all that time.
Yeah, I mean, there was what? Only four cautions for 19 laps.
Mm-hmm.
Average speed 160.6 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be a record right there. I mean, that's a pretty high average speed.
Yes.
Because you figure the race, they have time of race here. 3 hours, 44 minutes, and 5 seconds. I mean, that's not even 4 hours. That's 600 miles in less than 4 hours. Now they're going to go to Pocono, drive 400 miles, and have it be around the same amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And Pocono, when it was a 500-mile race, took forever because you had three different lengths of straightaway, mostly
mm-hmm.
flat, three different shaped corners, and it was pretty different because you couldn't set your car up for every corner. So you had to pick which one you would want to set it to run your best off as a driver.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want to set up best for corner number one, corner number two, or corner number three heading down the front straightaway?
You know, that's a really good question, and I think it comes down to this. It would be strategy, you know. You would kind of look and see what kind of tires you're running. You know, you'd have to – a lot would come into factor. And then what other people are doing too. So if they're obviously planning on being better later in the race, if you can get a jump ahead in the race, just strategy. So I don't know. It'd have to come down to that exact race for me to pick a corner. What would you pick?
When I pick, I would probably think I'd want to get off corner number three the best, because that's going to give you the best mm-hmm. launch heading down the straightaway to the finish line. You might be able to tweak. Now, if you looked at the track, the way it's shaped up, your sharpest corner is one. So you want to mm-hmm. get into that fine, but you're going to come into a lot of hard braking, so you're going to have to accelerate. Maybe your gearing would help you better in that one. Two, mm-hmm. it's more like when you got to chop off the point on, because it's more like it's just that triangle effect where you come into it and you just want to shave that off. So, but three is a sweeping corner, and that's where you're going to have to basically control everything. So I would think I'd want three to be the corner I'd set up for the best for, because if you're basically in traffic in the other one, you're kind of set where you got to be. But in three, you know, you want to set up to where everybody that does come with you is going to fan out. They can go four or five wide down that front straightaway. So I'd say that's mm-hmm. the one that I would set for.
That's good strategy right there. That's good strategy. Slow in, fast out too, you know. That come into play. Like you said, some of those corners are almost, you know, you're going to have to throw away a little bit of speed to get the good run on the coming out.
That's the one corner you're going to be in the longest, so
mm-hmm.
that's the one. Because the other ones, like I said, it's more like originally years ago, they used to call it a roval. It had road course oval type of thing because it was a triangle. Now they call it the tricky triangle, which it kind of is. So, but the way the corners were set up, because, you know, they're actually braking and shifting involved going around the track on a lap. So.
Yep.
Then they took it away and they gave it back to them because, you know, but that would help too. So that's how it earned that the name that Darrell Walter called it, the Roval. But I think the tricky triangle is more marketable.
I did too. I was thinking that. Yeah, that's a little more catchy, isn't it? You could put that on a t-shirt.
Yep. And this race last year, as a matter of fact, the first Pocono race, the winner of that one was this year's Coke 600 winner.
Mm-hmm.
And he pretty much led most of that race. He led four times for 97 laps. So if I'm going to go in to make a pick for this race, as much as I'd want to pick Truex, but he just won the biggest race of the longest race of the year in such mm-hmm. fashion that it kind of leans me to want to stick away from it. But if you had to pick a driver, who would you pick to win this week? Because I'm going to post it on the Facebook.
You know, I like the fact, kind of opposite of yours, that Truex actually won last year. He won this year. He won that last year. He won this race, but it's been hard for him to win. You know, I mean, it's been a long time coming. It's been a rough road for him this last little stretch here. So I think he's hungry enough to get it again. That's my pick. I saw that you picked Truex for this race too, so you got the right pick for this one.
Yeah, I got lucky because he was running so darn good and just fell a little short. And I was going to lean another way, and I said, you know what? I hope I don't jinx him, because usually when I pick somebody, they have a bad day, because I picked Jimmy Johnson for Dover, which is usually a no-brainer there. But
I would actually.
But he had problems.
Back to back.
But But the one who won the second race, which, believe it or not, is only the beginning of August when it's a little hot out, it was Kenseth, which was another Toyota. See, Truex last year was driving a Chevy that was supported by Childress Racing. This year he's driving Toyotas that are supported by Gibbs Racing, so that's why he's been running a lot better. But so I don't know whether to go with Kenseth or Keselowski, because Keselowski's won there the year before. Dale Jr.'s won there. It's just kind of thing. You're going with Truex, and I don't want to go with Truex because he did win. You know what? I'm going to go out on a reach. I'm going to go with Kyle Busch finds his way back to Victory Lane this week. He runs fairly decent there. Yeah, I'm going to go with him.
Awesome. It'll be fun to watch and see.
Yeah, should be interesting. Well, guess what?
But
we're all out of time.
We are.
Yep.
Well, this has been a great time. This has been fun. Thanks, Vince.
We'll have to do this again, so you'll have to let me know next time you have an off Tuesday, and we'll get that fun again.
Right on. That sounds like a plan.
All righty. So thanks for guest co-hosting today. Hopefully everybody can tune in. We have the links on our Facebook pages, but blogtalkradio.com/GarageTalkLive. You've been listening to Garage Talk Live with Vince and Awesome Jenny. You're going to be called Awesome all the time now. That's my nickname.
All right,
for you.
That works for me. Thank you. Awesome. That works. I like that one.
So we'll see you all next week. Have a good day and good racing. Bye now.
Bye.